Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host and I am back.
Return to me when let us be here.
You sound so excited.
Right? Man.
I am elated to be.
She's not even in the slightest elated.
No. She's like, this was my chance.
I took a week off. I gave everybody a chance to kind of do their own thing last week, and I came back this week and the chairs were overturned. There was a mess on the studio table. It all said managing intern manager Amy was here, written in lipstick on the table. I don't know what the heck happened last week, and
it was a riot.
It sounded like it. So I only got through halfway through that episode because I haven't been able to finish it. I'll tell you guys why in a second, but it seemed like
a
hoot. I am your host, Eddie Bienwoven, and alongside me, as always, is my wonderful best friend and co-host, Mr. Spencer Williams.
Yeah,
who's
me.
Awake now.
I am.
And as you heard a little bit ago, managing intern manager Amy.
Hey,
we
got
a great
lipstick on the table.
What?
There's no lipstick on the table right now.
That's because we cleaned it. The Consuela came through and wiped it down already. We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the recently released sci-fi film that is Project Hail Mary. So we're excited. You're excited. Listen in. Before we do, Spencer, give them the opening credits.
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week.
On all your favorite platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we have a Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
That's right. If you head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com, there we got allegedly overthrown episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, Tune In, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Losers. Give us a like or subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you like the episode? Did you not like the episode? We want to know your thoughts. And if you like the show, give us a 5-star review. We have earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
We'll give you the social links, the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. I was mentioning how I only got through half of the episode because, unfortunately, my entire free listening time has been taken up by this incredibly just addicting book series that we are all currently on. And if you've been living under a rock, you probably haven't heard about this. But
you might have secondhand heard about it.
Under a rock, possibly.
Yes.
No pun intended. You'd have to read the book. But, of course, we're talking about Dungeon Crawler Carl. Everybody from, you know, YouTubers galore who were talking about it all the way to the waiter that we were at that was at the restaurant not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, with me and Amy. We mentioned it and they had heard about it. It seems like it is catching fire.
And then we told Spencer.
Yeah,
and then we made the unfortunate for Spencer mistake of introducing him to it. Because ultimately he is breezed through. So let me put it in perspective. There are 7 books altogether. There is an eighth book ready to release in June.
May.
Mm-hmm. Amy was the first person to jump on this, Dungeon Crawler Carl bandwagon.
Toot, toot.
She then got me into it in February.
What month are we in?
It's March. So I believe it was February.
I think it was February.
Oh, no, it was January. It was January. I got into it in January. And we mentioned it to Spencer at the beginning of March.
No, it was mid-February because we went to see a movie.
We did. And I was like, Spencer, this book. And you're like, I'll try it out.
Yeah. And then I did.
And then we're here.
And so Spencer pretty much, I think between Spencer, myself, and Amy, I think we spend every waking hour we can where we're not intentionally like paying attention to things Well, okay, me and Spencer probably. Amy just doesn't listen to anybody. She'll have her AirPods in while we're supposed to be sitting in the living room watching TV or watching something, or somebody is talking and she's got one AirPod in and she's like looking on. And she's looking at people like, And then when it actually gets into a real conversation, I see her pick up her phone, push the pause button and like, now she's paying attention. Now she's in super mode. But the fact is we have breezed through in this entire time, six books. Now, almost six books. Amy has finished all six books. And she's patronizingly and trying to retrace all those books and reread them with us.
The reason I stopped was because I got yelled at for going to start book seven.
But she had been reading longer before us. I started, as Amy mentioned, in about mid-January. Mm-hmm. And I am about... three quarters of the way through book six. Spencer started in mid-February and is at the same place as I am.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
So
I'm more shocked that I got that far.
I'm not, because you consume, and you consume in like large quantities, especially if you don't have to do anything to consume it. Like you are absolutely the type of person where if you could be doing something and then you also could be doing something else, you'd do that.
Yeah, no, like, I would. I do that quite often.
There's a reason why when we watch movies with Spencer, we rate the movie on the device scale. True. How many devices is Spencer on that, you know, we can tell how much he's interested in?
I think sometimes it's not about interest level.
I think it is. We did Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay, I didn't like that.
And you were on a record four devices. That is a four device movie for Spencer. Spencer at the end was like, yeah, I didn't like it. It just wasn't. It didn't catch my attention. And we're like, noted. Duly noted. But yeah, I think Amy can speak to kind of the specificities of the book as far as author and whatnot. But the fact is, if you haven't heard of it, Dungeon Crawler Carl is essentially this this book series about a man and his cat, or technically his ex-girlfriend's cat, who end up in this alien dungeon crawl underneath the surface of the earth and has to traverse through all different challenges with meeting new people and engaging in battles and sequences and
fighting monsters
and nefarious moments of backstabbing and killing and foot fetishes.
And did we mention the entire thing is televised?
And it is all being televised to the universe as it's being managed like a reality TV show by a alien syndicate.
Sentient AI.
And the sentient AI, before Amy starts giving everything away, so
I left it right there.
You have to watch. There's a lot that goes on in this book series, there's a lot that goes on in the book series and written by
Matt Dinneman. However, we are currently partaking it by Jeff. I can never remember
your name. Jeff Hayes.
Jeff Hayes, yes. Of Sound Booth Theater.
Well, technically on Audible. We access it through Audible. Again, the way things are released, if you were part of that underground, you probably started listening to it via Sound Booth Theater. If you were even more underground than that, you were probably reading the books that you bought directly from his website way back when. I.e. one of my coworkers named Rex, who is the most underground of underground Dungeon Crawler Carl fans. He's been reading these books on his little nook for
since inception.
So Rex, here's a big shout out to you. But
yay, good job, Rex.
Yeah, I think it's just crazy how this type of story is kind of catching wind with a lot of mainstream people, and honestly it's I'm almost 99% certain this is gonna get some type of either big screen treatment or some type of like series.
I thought there was an animated series we were talking about.
I don't know, but literary RPGs, considering the boom in the past 10 to 15 years of
Critical Role,
Dimension 20, Dungeons and Daddies, I found one yesterday that was called Dum Dums and Dungeons. It was really entertaining, I guess.
I think the fact that you have such a kind of resurgence in interest based off of, like, I think I can truly say this is all stemming from both the popularity of things like Critical Role and the awareness based off of Stranger Things. Mm. Eddie Munson did wonders for the game. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of people became more enamored with
elevated it. I mean, the kids were playing before they met Eddie.
I mean, a lot of non-mainstream people were playing it because of Critical Role, Dimension 20. You know, you had a lot more fanship, I guess, if you will, in that arena. And then Stranger Things just ultimately brought D&D back to the forefront. Truly. I think if anything, D&D can attribute its current fame and popularity because of everything Stranger Things did. As much as I don't really want to attribute that success to Stranger Things because I just think D&D is just great by itself, the fact is...
Honor among thieves.
Yeah. So I think there's, you know, there's this resurgence and we see a lot more of, you know, people wanting to consume content like this. And as much as this isn't technically a D&D campaign.
Oh, it certainly feels like it.
It's absolutely a dungeon crawl. And if you've ever done a campaign, you know those dungeon crawls usually are
shenanigans.
It's so much shenanigans and so much fun. So if you get a chance, check out your current Audible selection and look for Dungeon Crawler Carl. There's currently 7 books available. The 8th book will be out in May. That we're not endorsed or sponsored. We're just really big fans of Matt Dinneman and his works, and Jeff Hayes' performance as the narrator
is absolutely fantastic. And even if you like just a little bit Patrick Warburton, you're gonna like this book. That's how I got you into it. I was like, yeah. How do you feel about semi-Patrick Warburton?
I love Patrick Warburton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, speaking of sci-fi to sci-fi, that does bring us to our conversation of the evening. I mean, we're talking aliens and whatnot in that movie, so we're talking space in this one.
Those literary RPGs. Keep going.
You know, you didn't have to interrupt. Just saying. Either way, we're bringing up our conversation of the evening, and that is our thoughts on the recently released sci-fi film, and that is Project Hail Mary.
Hail.
This movie has been one of the more anticipated sci-fi films of 2026, as the prolific author himself, Andy Weir, is the writer of this particular story. If that name sounds familiar, he is also the author of the hit sci-fi film from not too long ago, The Martian, with Matt Damon. So before we move any further, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness? And if you don't like the synopsis, it was Amy's fault.
What?
Wait, why? Did she write it?
She wrote it.
No, I pulled it straight from the studio.
Oh, okay. Because this synopsis has my main problem with this movie in it.
Then if you want to get rid of that bit, get rid of
nope, I'm nope. gonna keep it.
It's all your fault.
Science teacher Ryland Grace wakes up on a spaceship light years away from home with no recollection of who he is or how he got there. As his memory returns, he begins not move around like that.
I didn't move anything.
You're popping up on the notes.
Oh, I'm sorry. So sorry.
Let's try that. Take two. Here we go. Spencer, official synopsis goodness.
Science teacher Ryland Grace wakes up on a spaceship light years from home with no recollection of who he is or how he got there. As his memory returns, he begins to uncover his mission. Solve the riddle of the mysterious substance causing the sun to die out. He must call on his scientific knowledge and unorthodox ideas to save everything on Earth from extinction. But an unexpected friendship means he may not have to do it alone.
Directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller and written by Drew Goddard and Andy Weir, where this is based on the 2021 book by him. The film stars Ryan Gosling, Sandra Hüller, and James Ortiz, as well as Eva Stratt, apparently, because she's in this as well. The scene where a couple key pieces about the film, the scene where Eva Stratt sings karaoke was not in the original script. Ryan Gosling actually overheard. Oh, her name's Sandra Hüller. Yeah. You could have said that. Ryan Gosling overheard Sandra Hüller singing between takes and asked her to perform for the movie just 48 hours before filming that scene. Hüller agreed and selected Sign of the Times as her song. Another key piece of information, Ryan Gosling's daughter. Oh, by the way.
Spoiler alert, if you
haven't seen the movie, just so you know. Yeah, I mean, just so you know, Amy decided to put this information in the thought you should know parts, and so you can blame her.
Do you know, we should put a sheep over the thing so you can read it, and then we can make it.
You know, it would have been a great opportunity for you to say something like that.
Like a sheep?
Back when I actually had an opportunity to edit this.
Do you have a sheep?
No, I don't have a sheep. Why would I have a sheep?
I don't know.
Okay. No sheep. Ryan Gosling's daughter, Esmeralda Enomata, occasionally spoke for his co-star through voiced in the film by James Ortiz through his earpiece on set. Speaking of their help, Gosling said, "There are some moments in the movie where I'm laughing or I'm just so charmed by, which is like, it's actually my kids talking to me and helping me out."
Yay. That's cool.
And then shouldn't have to do
it. Yeah. And then I have to do that again for the second one. So one of the credits for, quote, rejected voice is Ray Porter, the narrator of the English language version of the Project Hail Mary audiobook. That was ridiculous. It's just saying.
It was kind of fun.
No, though. It wasn't fun at all. It
Spencer,
should,
sir, you chuckled.
That's
it's only because of what he's doing.
Yeah, not on what you did. So
I tried.
Intern notes critique. That's a solid C.
There were not very good.
There were others. I had seen them.
Yet you didn't do it.
Because I wanted to see if you were actually going to do your duties. So,
speaking backseat intern.
I did.
He keeps doing that.
I can do that.
Yelled at a lot.
So again, as we dive into this discussion, obviously one more time, so that you know, spoiler alerts, we are going to be talking about probably some of the more major spoilers of the film, just because you can't really talk about this movie without incorporating that. And truth be told, if you saw any of the trailers, you kind of know what some of those teasers are. So... yeah, but diving in, let's go ahead and talk about obviously the, so why do you have book?
My brain fried. I thought we would talk about the book and like your,
did person. You read the book?
Yeah, I thought
no, I didn't. So yeah. You guys get to talk about
did
it.
Did you read the
like,
book, Spence?
Yes.
I read the book.
Yes.
See?
But why would we talk about the book before we even talk about the movie?
Maybe it got put in the wrong spot on the bullet list. I had a very long day. I was Spencer. Staring at numbers at my actual Spencer. Other job, so
Spencer.
Please forgive me.
Spencer, we're going to have to talk about this. so let's talk about expectations going
back.
Into the movie.
No, you sir.
let's talk about expectations going into the movie. Obviously, when we're talking about expectations, we're just talking about feelings we had prior to going into the movie. I want to start with Spencer, because I feel like Spencer and I probably share the same sentiment. Amy's somewhere still talking about the book. Go ahead, Spencer.
Okay, so... Just going into it, we have to talk about the trailers as we always do. Yeah. Normally, my problem is trailers lie. Why? That's not the problem here. Is that
they were a little too honest.
Don't shut up. Like, that's my piece of advice. You give it away like some of like the best surprises in the movie in your trailer, and I just like you. It's so weird because the premise of this story. Works fantastically for a trailer. You just have to be like, ooh, like Petrovala, just throw out like words of things. And then like you have such a good like setup for like a kind of serious trailer.
Yeah.
And then you just bring in like Ryan Gosling being jokey Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
And it kind of works for itself as a trailer without talking about like the big draw of the movie.
Like I feel like this could have easily been pitched almost like I don't know if you guys saw Moon with Sam Rockwell. But it could have been.
I did. Oh my gosh, that was good too.
Did you, Spence?
So long ago that I don't remember what it's about.
Well, it's ultimately just him. I mean, if we look at The Martian, like you could have pitched it as almost like a Martian-esque type scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
You could have easily just created the sizzle reel of just Ryan Gosling moments and created the tension there. You didn't have to bring in the twist. In the first big trailer.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? Like, in the teaser trailer, I think it actually hints it in the first teaser trailer. Like, why?
Yeah.
There's a whole kind of surprise to it when you read it in the book. Why would you rob that of people actually experiencing that in the movie?
Because the thing about the book was when I was like looking at like, you know, the synopsis for that, didn't even mention it.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even know that was going to be a thing we dealt with, which made it awesome when he just showed up in the middle. I was like, oh, he's Stig? This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead and finish. So if you had any other expectations.
Okay. So yeah. So, so starting with that, I'm already upset. but I'm like, I'm I'm fairly confident, even though I feel like they made this huge fumble, there's still room for them to make this a good movie. So I was just like, just knock the rest of it out of the park. Yeah. It should be fine. I'm annoyed about this, but whatever.
I was in that same boat as far as the mentality goes for the big reveal in the teaser, not even the trailer, in the teaser.
Yeah.
Not in the official trailer, the teaser trailer. But I think one of the biggest things that kind of helped carry a lot of my anticipation for the movie was just avoiding everything else. Mm-hmm. Like, I intentionally kept myself, like, I had read the book still, but I didn't need to see what I had already read being kind of spoiled on screen. So I stopped every trailer. I didn't watch any other teasers. I didn't watch any 30-second spots. Yeah. I stayed very far away from anything. Like, if there was a video and in the middle there was an ad and that was playing, I turned off the video. Like, I had no problem doing it. I really had a sour taste in my mouth because of that first teaser. And I was really hoping that whatever was going to be shown in any subsequent follow-up teaser trailer, that nothing else was going to get spoiled. Mm. And thankfully, nothing else got spoiled for the rest of the film, thank God. But still, it was like one of those things where it's like the trailer industry isn't that difficult. Like,
apparently it is.
Like, apparently it is, but it shouldn't be that difficult. Like, you're creating just a teaser. It's in the name, a teaser. You're trying to tease people. Like, unless you're ready to like make the movie in the trailer form, like, don't show things like that.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like common sense to me. And it seems like it sounds like common sense to you. And I'm pretty sure Amy would agree, even though she's on her phone. Like, I feel like it just makes sense. Why would you give away parts of the story, parts of the film, that are going to bring people either an immense amount of joy or wonder or awe, and just put it out there even before they go to the theaters?
I wonder if they're, if like the studios are like forcing their hand on that, because it seems like it might be one, like, you know how everyone's like, attendance is down.
Yeah,
I feel like I wonder if this is like some misguided attempt by studios to be like, no, we need to show them something super cool so that they want to go. And I feel like it's backfiring on them and they don't fully see it, which I'm like, how can you
but
not?
That's just, I feel like that's just so backwards thinking. Like, I don't doubt your logic. Like, in fact, I'm pretty sure that's a huge part of it probably. But it's such a backward ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you try to attract people with big reveals in the teaser when you can just create a better teaser? Like, what is, where's the artistry? Is it just laziness? Is that where we're at when it comes to creating trailers? Are we just expecting lazy work? Like,
I don't know what.
At this point, just give the dang industry to AI. Because, like, if they're not, or at least I'm talking about teaser trailers. Like, I'm not talking about everything else. Like, that's about it. But, like, because it just seems like there's no intentionality behind it anymore. There's no, like, artistry to it. There's no, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember back when, like, trailers were, like, stories. Like, even certain ones now, like, there's a couple that come out that you're like, oh my gosh, this is, I want to go see this. And it's few and far between. But like even Netflix just did they dropped a recent trailer for a movie called Apex. And it's got Charlize Theron and
Taron Egerton,
I think it is, because there's no E, there's no DG. Yeah. Joel EG. Taron Egerton and Charlize Theron. And it was, I don't know what it's, I know there's like a chase involved, but it's crazy and it actually looks good. And that was a fun trailer. And that's for Netflix. Like, Netflix, whoever does your trailer, send them to everyone else.
Ooh, and if those people happen to be Netflix doing the trailer, they should outsource that as a, like, hey, we can do trailers for everybody. It'll be good.
Yeah, we need the money. Send people this way. We lost HBO. I don't know. What about you, Ames? What were some of your first impressions? Your expectations? So you could have interjected in this conversation.
This is an opportunity for both people who have read the book, and it's usually.
But we weren't talking about the book.
No, but it also influenced just because your expectations of how you're going into the film. So with me, because I was aware that this was a book, and it was Andy Weir. And
you didn't read it?
I hadn't read it.
You keep going off of that book premise, and I'm like, but you didn't read it.
But so. I didn't. Well, and I think that's something kind of to be said, where in that first trailer, I was like, oh, this is cool. Oh, okay, this is cool. And then they get to that part, and I was like, was that the twist? Was that the surprise? Did you guys just mess it up? And I think even and then the farther in you got, the more intense and extensive the trailers got. And yeah, they're like, surprise, look at. And I was like, no, I was okay when it was just a very small part that I couldn't really see anything. So I was like, okay, I can keep like you messed it up, but I don't know to the full extent how messed up you messed up. And then they went all the way.
Yeah. See, we were already mad about that first bit.
Like, and even then I was like, okay, they messed up the reveal for wherever it was, because I had asked you and you're like, no, no, they weren't supposed to show you that. And I was like, uh-oh. But then I got trapped in a trailer, like in a loop for a trailer. You know, trailer. where you're sitting in the seat in, you know, movie theater, and they show you a recent trailer.
Oh yeah, I started wearing earbuds.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, and then they showed so much, and I was like, great. So my expectations were, man, the surprise is gone, but it still looks cool. So I'm excited to come in and try to like participate in this.
Yeah.
Even if Amazon and MGM Studios are the distributors.
And I think it goes back to like, because I know we still got to do like first impressions, but like it goes back to the mentality of what is a trailer's purpose? What is the teaser trailer's purpose? And there's like an artistry to it. And I mentioned this earlier, like the artistry of it. The artistry of creating a teaser trailer is to build something that's, number one, factual. Number two, has the narrative. And number three, creates anticipation without giving anything substantial. Now, if you're going to give anything substantial, then lean into it from the beginning. Like if they were going to show, you know, obviously we mentioned spoiler alerts. If they were going to mention Rocky or show Rocky in any of the trailers, they should have started with showing him at the beginning. Like, and then it's almost like a buddy film in space. Then it's more, it's no longer just science, but it's science fiction at that point.
Well, see, even for me in that initial one where all we saw were fingertips, I was like, I don't know what the rest of on the other side of those fingertips are. So I still had that kind of like, ooh, surprise reveal. Like, I don't know what's going on. And then they showed everything. And I was mad. Yeah. They showed everything prematurely.
Yeah. I feel like whatever the decisions were, it had to be based on like, how do we get butts in seats? Yeah.
Money.
Without considering the actual book audience. Because let's be honest, the book community who were fans of this novel were PO'd
yeah,
from that first teaser. They were upset. It was all over social media. People were like, they showed this. Oh my God. So, I don't know what the thought process is or the logic, but it happened. And so we all got a chance to see the movie. And in... after the fact, we obviously came here. Not, we didn't see it recently, but we're here now to talk about it. And so let's talk about first impressions, starting with Amy.
I loved it. It had such a great vibe about it. I felt connected to it. There were some shots that I was like, oh, that's nice. And there's a lot of, I want to talk about it more when we get into the meat in the story and the performances. Because if I start talking about it right now, I'm going to give you my summary and my monocles and then be like, let's go watch it again. So I got to wait.
Okay.
Spence. I
gotta
wait.
For me, I was like, okay, like the movie is good. I'm very curious on what someone who has not read the book thinks of this movie.
Yay.
Because I had questions that popped up during the movie.
This is
because
be
I
fun.
Can't tell if it's just like I know too much and like I'm like, even though I'm trying to leave that behind, if that's like affecting how I think about certain scenes, or if like with less context of the book you're like, oh yeah, this is perfectly fine. I'm assuming it's perfectly fine.
Is it gonna be an ask the managing intern questions?
Yeah. Yes it is. But yeah, what about you, Ed?
Surprisingly, I actually had a good time with it in spite of everything that happened in the trailers. It thankfully didn't give away a bigger side of that story element, and it still left much for people. Obviously, as fans of the book, like, I'm glad because I knew it. Honestly, if I had not read the book, I probably would have came in with a negative disposition because I'm like, well, why am I watching? It's kind of like what happened with, what was it with Hopper's? Kind of like with Goat, like coming in with like a predisposition already because of what I saw in the trailers.
Goat.
Again, this is a season where trailers lie.
I don't know what is wrong.
Like this entire
we're
year.
We're not even at the lie part. We're just doing a
bad job. Yeah, we're just
they're
doing just, bad trailers.
Really bad trailers. And then they try to pivot at the end and you're like, no.
No, it's too late.
Too late. Yeah. Too late.
I really did, though, have a good time with it and I'm anxious to talk about it as well. And we will get more into that after these messages. Okay, we're back. So let's talk about the movie a little bit more as far as the performers. Obviously, we have a great performance by the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Ryan Gosling. I think Ryan Gosling is a vampire because it doesn't look like he ever ages. He's on that same level as Keanu.
His wife also looks like she's never aged either. So
Eva Mendes? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, I think Ryan Gosling is cut from the same cloth as Keanu Reeves. Because they both still look like they were when they were very young. Ryan Gosling still looks like he was off of Remember the Titans. So I'm just saying.
I thought you were going to bring up young Hercules.
No.
He's a little leaner in the face I mean, in
he's,
that one.
He's quite leaner in that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, great performance, great actor. I mean, I don't think there's really been a performance of Ryan Gosling's I didn't like. I can't really think of one.
I can't either.
My distaste for the Notebook doesn't actually say anything about his performance because it was good.
Yeah, I mean, he was good in that. I mean, you know, every Nicholas Winding Refn movie that he's done has been great. Even some of his more comedic roles, La La Land was good.
For the most part, I have issue with the movies. And never with his performance, where I'm just like, I don't really like that movie. Yeah.
Switching gears to the other performer, obviously the female lead, or somewhat of the lead in this movie, Sandra Hüller. I've been saying her name wrong, but
she's
Hüller.
Norwegian.
So. Yeah, so it'd probably be Hüller.
I guess. The Google wouldn't let me do the little double point over the top of the U.
And you have it in one of them.
Oh, yeah. That one I copied and pasted. Go me. Right
there. See.
Yay.
Something
worked.
She played a really great role as Eva Stratt, as the project manager, so to speak, liaison. I think I expected somebody a little bit more stern, I guess. And we'll talk about the differences as far as the book Eva and the movie Eva. But like, I just expected somebody to be a little bit more, I think, more militaristic.
Cold
is probably a really good way to put it. But that doesn't mean that this performance wasn't great. So she did a really stellar job. I do appreciate her efforts in this movie. And then, of course, the vocal talents of one, James Ortiz, who plays our...
It wasn't just vocals. He was also lead.
Oh, he did puppeteering.
He was lead puppeteer.
Mm.
And he was part of the build team.
Oh, very cool. So not only did he do the voice, but he did the puppeteering as well as the design.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Which makes sense now why on the Tested channel, Adam Savage does an interview with him. But when I saw it, I'm like, okay, he's talking to the designers. But then if he's also the designer, the vocal, the voice for it, as well as the puppeteer, that's like a triple threat. Mm-hmm. So, great performance. Stellar performance. Absolutely wonderful. I think James Ortiz did a phenomenal job as Rocky. I don't know if anybody else could have pulled it off, to be honest. There was enough robotic nature to his voice that warranted the removal of emotion, but you still felt the emotion in what he was saying. It was very Wally-esque, like, if I'm being completely honest.
It was very, and I think because he was also lead puppeteering, the fact that Rocky, surprise, doesn't have a face or a mouth when we finally ever.
I mean, technically, he does have a mouth.
I mean, yeah.
He does.
Yes, he does have a mouth.
He does have a mouth. why do you keep going?
Because that reveal is a very interesting reveal. But I think it was the physicality that did exactly what Wally did. And that's why we draw that comparison, because there is so much emphasis almost in mime work. Mm-hmm. Like what I liked about the Sprouse in the Lisa Frankenstein movie, where he was doing a lot of
Cole Sprouse.
Thank you. I couldn't remember which one. But when he was doing a lot of mime work and it was all the emoting and we could see it through his face and through his movement, Rocky was just amped up to a million, where there's these little ticks and lifts and movements, and it's not fully angular, and sometimes it's clumsy, and the puppet gives way to the character that translates so seamlessly before we understand a single word.
Yeah. I do have to give credit to also the team who built the puppet and built the almost the personality off of the features of the puppet that really kind of sold a lot of what you're looking at, what you're trying to, what it's trying to exude as far as emotion. Because easily you could have just done CG. Like, and I say easy because someone could have just came in, animated it, created the design, then just did whatever they need to for every scene. Thankfully, they didn't do that. And there was more physicality to what was going on with, you know, with Rocky and with Ryan Gosling's character, Dr. Grace. And I really felt the physical presence of both of them in each and every scene. And you take somebody who is wonderful as an actor, as Ryan Gosling, and you take someone who was endearing as a character as Rocky, and you put them together and you just get, honestly, movie magic. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the movie a bit. And I know Amy wanted to kind of move forward as far as discussing the film itself, the story elements.
Yeah. So I really, as somebody who did not read the book and who came into the front half of this kind of wondering / knowing, okay, there's something going on that is requiring Ryan Gosling to leave the planet. and a lot of the layering, because I didn't know how he was going to get to space, was very interesting for me to see, as well as the feeling of when we first meet him and where we meet him in his classroom with his kids, and then how that translates into him meeting Eva, who's the commander, the head of the project for Project Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. It was so interesting to see, because it had this warmth and then it became slightly cold and more, and I say sciencey in a good way, but it became more like, okay, we've got a job to do, this is what we're doing, and like Ryan Gosling is trying to pepper in and move in and out with little bits of humor to break up the seriousness of it, which was really like a breath of fresh, like it made me less worried about him within his universe and in his Earth, because it's like, okay, we can fix this. Like, yeah. He wasn't so eccentric, but he still kind of like tottered along that line of like a little bit of the goofy professor.
Mm.
And it was really nice for me to not be like, oh my gosh, okay, the world is ending. He's trying to find a solution. Nothing's ever working. Everything's exploding.
Mm. Well, and the crazy part about it, and mind you, I don't want to go into too many details, but like, the book goes more into like what has already been done to try to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Like there's a whole sequence where they actually pave over the entire Sahara Desert and just like covered entirely with solar panels.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's like nuking of certain parts of the world.
Holy crap.
Like there's a lot that's done prior to getting to that point, but it's all the way that the mechanics of how this film is telling the story is very similar to the way the book does it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the waking up portion and then it's all through flashbacks throughout. I mean, there's nothing really major as far as differences, I would say. Like a lot of the little differences between the book and the movie are just minor parts. Like, for instance,
I might have feelings about that though.
Well, I mean, some of the major ones are I was mentioning is like the waking up process. It's not as instantaneous. It does take a few times. He does end up getting put back to sleep like twice in the book because he doesn't recall who he is as he's waking up. Yes. So the robot actually puts him back to sleep. Mm-hmm. There's certain sequences where it's like the remembrance of like what exactly is the issue and the rest of the team members that were actually a part of it that aren't mentioned in the movie.
They're not mentioned.
Like there's like two other people that are a part of that team that don't get mentioned. I don't recall, but they're
it's been a while.
Yeah, they're not really of.
Oh, in the book.
In the book, yeah.
Yeah, in the movie, they gave them a little more like.
Well, and even here. Again, actually, and another aspect, like the Asian astronaut, it has a totally different personality in the movie, than in the book. But again, it's not major enough to where it diverts the entire story into another like train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
But there's if you've read the book, you'll see like some of those little minor points, like that wasn't like that in the book, but it's okay. Like, whatever. Like, it's again, I don't know. How do you feel about that, Spencer? This the other person read it.
Yeah. So the movie does, like, as you said, like, you know, make some changes. Most of them I'm fine with, except for that last one.
Oh.
Where I'm like,
oh, I don't know if I agree with what you're saying.
But, like, the problem is the movie is like, just didn't gloss over so much. I'm like, well, I guess that might be fine because like there's none of the problems in this movie that the book has.
Yeah.
Is that relating to?
It's relating to the ending.
Yeah.
Oh, like the full ending?
Well, it's a perspective of it. I would say, again, without giving anything away, obviously we did talk about spoilers, but you know how we feel.
Just hold the button down.
Yeah.
this conversation is redacted.
I am not going to do this the entire time. That's just not going to work. Amy, no.
But now I'm curious.
Well, I mean, again.
We can talk about it later.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, fine. I will ask about it later.
But again, like they're all aspects of the book adapted into the movie that. Obviously, you look at it and you're like, okay, for time, okay, I get it.
So speaking of time, that's the thing I want, because like I feel like maybe I was being hung up. Amy.
Yes.
What are your opinions on the pacing of this movie of like the initial, like of like Ryan Gosling waking up to like around the first like flashback? What do you think about the pacing of that?
Okay. So to be honest, I know where you're going. It was a little slow for me.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
And the reason I can say it.
Wait. It was a little slow for you from the moment he woke up to his first flashback. Is that what you just said?
Well, the thing is, he's around the ship and he's doing the kind of walkabout thing. And I was like, is this supposed to be like, does he know where he is? What we're doing? Does he know how to push buttons?
Again, let me remind you, the waking up and becoming somewhat aware in the book is not as instantaneous as the movie. In fact, you're probably not until the fifth chapter.
So he's just dreaming essentially and you're getting flashbacks in the book?
It's him trying to find ways to get away from the robot so that it doesn't knock him out and put him back into sleep.
Yeah. Robot is like that robot initial is, antagonist yeah. in the movie.
He is,
where it's like, let me go. It's like, no, you're mine. And it's just like, what's your name? And it's like, I don't know. And you're just like, good night.
Pretty much.
I have a question. Because in the movie, the little helper arm.
That thing.
His name was Armando. But I thought it was Mary that was putting him back to sleep. It was the ship.
No, it was Armando who was putting him back to sleep. Like he would literally, ask him. He would literally follow a series of questions like, incorrect. You will now go back to sleep. Like it would literally put him back to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
Like every time he would wake up, he would like struggle and then he would try to get out of bed. He would pick him up, put him back in bed, put him to sleep.
I'm not going
to
lie. That would have been really entertaining, but it would have also dragged this out extensively.
Again, that beginning portion from the moment he finally actually gets out of his bed and steers away from the robot enough to start waking up to the point to where he has his like first flashback is almost like six chapters in.
Jiminy.
5-6 chapters in.
Yeah, so I was asking about pacing because I was like, oh gosh, we're like off to a run. Like that's
yeah.
See, and for me, like it was, and I think that's the thing that I missed, that there was no, the robot, the ship slash robot did not put him back to sleep.
Yeah.
It was like a one and done. And so he's kind of meandering around and I'm like, what's he looking to jog his memory? Because part of me was also like, he's not freaking out enough for someone with amnesia. Like for me, for everything that I've seen. And again, this is movie well, amnesia.
So and that's also a part of another question that isn't really addressed in the movie. And that's kind of like the reasoning as to why the selection process for this project, for this mission was so particular. Which they don't talk about the coma gene.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so that's,
so you could take night naps and they're like, we like when you take night naps.
No.
No.
Spencer, you want to explain?
Okay, so from my recollection, they found out that like certain members of humanity had a gene uh-huh. that like helped them survive comas better than
like hypersleep.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. Instead of creating something to help support hypersleep, someone could just be in a coma.
No,
and most likely they'd wake up and it'd be cool.
No, it's the process of surviving the hypersleep. Because if you're so they tried to take a more logical approach to hypersleep.
What is the percentage of people with this gene that are apt to wake up? Because
it's very low.
It was very low again, on that ship.
Again, it's the reasonings why the other two don't wake up.
See, that would have been great to know, because then I would have been like, whoa, my guy, how the heck?
Yeah,
because it comes across as kind of weird that they just died.
Yeah. And I was like, did something get in? And my thing was rules again, all the multiple ways we see hyperspace travel and hypersleep, where I'm like, what happened? What yeah. happened to you? Like, was there a bubble? Did you get a brain aneurysm? Like, yeah. I don't know.
That's also that takes backstory that I feel like they just didn't have the time to get into. Yeah. But it's a contributing factor to something that's like a glaring for anybody who's read the book. You're like, wait, so you're not going to say why they're dead? We're just going to gloss over. Whereas people who are just watching the movie, you were probably like, oh, they didn't make it. Okay.
See, I had questions of like, I wanted to kind of know, because the way that they're presented is when Ryan Gosling's allowed to wake up, he's kind of like, whoa, they just chill in here. And they did. Yeah. And I'm like, so the ship tried to wake them up first initially. And part of me is like,
no, they weren't. So the hypersleep kind of works on like they're put into the hypersleep process. But at a certain point in time, they are kind of given the opportunity to wake up themselves to show that they're cognitive enough to wake up to do their job.
Is that what they did to Ryan Gosling?
That's what they were doing to him in the book.
Oh,
he wasn't kind of, because he wasn't recollecting as quickly as they needed him to. He wasn't cognitively ready.
And they
ready.
Kept putting him to night. So
yeah. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of like other little things. Like I mentioned, like the nuking of one part of the country, the paving over of the Sahara Desert. The Eva Stratt character is a much more like authoritative kind of figure. She's very more stern and cold. Which makes the other parts of the story make more sense.
Yeah,
as far as decision making.
That interesting bit, which I think you're referring to, with the and.
Wait, what part are you talking?
Amy's over here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, Ames is playing.
I'm trying to play really bad Pictionary. Okay.
I know what you're talking about now.
It's yeah. not Pictionary. I'm not it's charades.
About that. Oh, scene. It's not that.
I'm talking. The scene I'm talking about is at like, the very end.
Ames, stop. Oh my gosh.
I wanna know.
She's playing charades, which she said Pictionary. It's not Pictionary. You're doing charades.
I'm making a picture.
No, you're not.
I'm painting a very poor picture.
But I do have to say, like, I do like the actual representation of Rocky. I like the way this one kind of presents him. And the fact, again, going back to the element of having some practicality of a practical, prop, it adds so much more layers to the scenes.
He wasn't just a puppet. He was a person. It was very reminiscent of engaging, like when you engage with the builders that build the mechs for Star Wars, like the R2s or the Wally, or going in and there's a kid with a puppet for the Lion King. Like, there's a personification that is imbued into those puppets because of those performers. And you felt it so deeply in Rocky that there wasn't a space where I was like, Rocky is just a puppet. I was like, Rocky is a dude. We need to support this dude. He's got issues, a lot of them, and he's very worried about a lot of people. And I think that's what made him and Grace's relationship so sweet, was because Rocky felt like somebody I would know or somebody I would spend time around. And I'm like, oh, don't break my heart, please. Please, movie, don't break my heart, please.
Yeah, Rocky, especially in the book, like, he makes the story.
Yay!
What is so interesting about it? Because, like, you walk in with no thing that's going to be about aliens showing up, and, like, they just show up, and you're like, oh, I didn't realize we were going in the direction. That's why we're kind of upset about the trailer and showing off that he even exists in the universe. Because it's a lovely surprise if you're not expecting it.
Like, really, if I had, like... If they had just stopped with, like, again, they showed his fingers in the first one. If they had left that entirely alone and then I went in with the rest of the reveal for him in his entirety, I would have been, it would have reminded me of the moment when I first saw The Flight of the Navigator. Mm-hmm. And it had that energy of, like, when you, not only when you see all the other aliens, but when the ship comes down as the big eyeball.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, like... It would have created that. It would have given me more space to have that sudden curiosity, and something that is more prevalent usually when we're kids. Like, I like being able to do that. And they kind of stole it from me. Like, I wasn't as excited, but I was like, oh. And then I was like trying to hone in on different parts of Rocky. And I was like, is that a burn? Are those tattoos? Is that a scar? Like, because I became more engrossed on trying to figure out all the little bits of Rocky, no pun intended. Yeah. And instead of just taking him as a whole and being so elated by him.
Which, again, that's what I loved about the practical effect work of that prop. Implementing something that's tangible, and you see it and you see how it interacts with the environment there. It's like a legitimate piece of character that you're watching. You're not looking at, you know, somebody trying to react to a CG character. It just felt more tangible in the scene, and I definitely appreciated it. And speaking of Alien, obviously, when you're talking about any movie that takes place in space, there is a level of science to a lot of these types of movies. And I think that's also another really big shift from the book to the film. Like, it's not major, but it is a notable one. There's just, I mean, it's Andy Weir. Anywhere.
The man loves science.
Well, he's a scientist, obviously. Yeah, so he's a former science. NASA engineer.
Hello? Like, there was no fault in the way that I did it. The man loves science.
But the fact is, like, there's just more emphasis, like, during that time when it's almost like a montage where they're figuring out a lot of things.
With the astrophage?
Yes. Astrophage?
Phage.
Phage. I threw an L in there. Sorry, I was thinking about a magic card.
Okay. In the book, there's just more time taken for, like, the science of it, the mathematics of it, calculating certain aspects of the burn of the astrophage or anything like that.
So I think that also comes into play where that while the time wants to be taken, because it did say the second draft was for writing the movie, Andy Weir was the person that did that, where I think they had to condense some of the...
Oh, no, without a doubt. I mean, it would have been boring if they would have just sat there and he's talking to a rock about, you know, calculating numbers. Yeah.
Well, like, they weren't playing, like, Nickelback or Foo Fighters while they were doing the montage. So I was like, respect, you're sciencing really hard right now, guys.
But I think though, like, the full aspect of what the mission was and even some of the visuals in this movie were, like, pretty incredible. Like, I have to admit, the way they portrayed this movie, and when you have somebody like the Miller and Lord
Productions,
duo.
Yeah.
Is that the name of their production studio?
I believe they're Miller and Lord Productions. Hold on. Lord Miller Productions.
Lord Miller Productions. I mean, with the directorial team of Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, I mean, they're just incredible directors. And they're the vision that they have for most movies that they do, pretty much every movie so far, that they've done always executes with a sense of awe and wonder. And you gave them an opportunity to go into space. And like, it just, they nailed the whole aspect of it. Like, not only the trip to, but even, you know, being in space, being in a new place, out in the middle of space, spaceship designs, like, it's just really cool. And you got to give credit to that team, knowing visually what they were going for and then executing upon it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I do want to bring up is that Miller and Lord, the last time they did a live action film, it was 2014's 22 Jump Street that they directed. So everything else they've been part, yeah. So everything else they've been partnered with has either been, and they were uncredited in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Well, that's as directors.
That's for the best.
Well, because I think they got only partial credit because they were let go.
Oh,
well,
good.
They didn't finish it.
Escape, my men, escape.
to me, but, my X-Men over here. X-Men.
But I think also because they've been so prevalent in writing and being producers for like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Mitchell's Versus the Machines, mm-hmm. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, directing when they did the Lego Movie and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah.
I think was such a nice way to carry that spirit of those dreamers into a literal space, where you have Ryan Gosling, who is Ken, he is Kenuff, and it shines with an earnesty and a playfulness, which I know, Spencer, you and I had talked very briefly off air about your feelings towards the overall tone of the movie, where it was just a little something.
It was a lot. The book's not that
jokey. It was apparently
jokey.
A lot of something.
No, the movie has a very jokey tone about it, and the book is not that jokey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I was expecting a bit of a tone shift because you have to make it palatable to like larger audiences, and they might not be ready for, hey, everyone's going to die on this planet.
Yeah.
Like, that could immediately have a very depressing tone. So, like, even though I feel like they lean a little on the too jokey side, I think it kind of works for the movie that they were going for.
Yeah, I think they had to kind of soften the harsh edges of this book, this story, to create a more approachable sense for audiences. Because I feel like if people were going into the theater and they got the direct adaptation from this book, it would be a very like pragmatic approach to displaying the story. Like, it'd be very much like everything is bad, and you know, there's like a sense of like just light the match and then walk away from the embers kind of mentality. Like, and mind you, the story itself is a great story. Andy Ware does a phenomenal job creating this tale of, you know, saving the world ultimately, but it's from a very scientific point of view. It's from a very like scientist point of view, a very logical point of view. And then you bring in, like I said, Christopher Miller and Phil Lord.
Oh, opposite.
Phil Miller and Christopher Lord.
Yeah. Yes. Wait.
You bring in Miller and Lord.
Thank you.
And you create a sense of, it's kind of like what James Gunn did with the Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, mind you, that's a comic book adapted into a film. But when you look at Guardians of the Galaxy, nobody knew who the heck the Guardians of the Galaxy were. So unless you were a hardcore comic book fan,
yeah,
there really wasn't much like draw for this story to be told for the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you have a story like this where, yes, again, the book was great. However, you need somebody to come in who can create a more unique experience with this story without feeling like, you know, the world is just 10 steps away from the end of this book, like currently. It adds more opportunities to create connection and brevity within an already bleak situation.
Well, I think it also gave homage to multiple sci-fi movies of old, where there's a particular tone that's played, there's knocking, that I was like, oh, I get those references. But it also gave an opportunity where the vastness of space is no longer a terror. It did something about inspiring wonder in, like, because when we think of like The Last Starfighter or Flight of the Navigator or even Close Encounters of the Third Kind, like some of those, which mind you, I was always freaked out by Close Encounters of the Third Kind, not gonna lie. It had more I'm gonna bring up StarKid. Like, that was ridiculous. But it brought this sense of wonder and question to the universe as a whole without making us afraid. And when we have things like Alien, and don't get me wrong, it's a great franchise, scares the pants out of you, like, consistently. Or Event Horizon, I saw you coming. This movie brings hope in the face of certain doom to our planet. And it does something, even though he is 11 years away, there's enough brevity that it makes it feel like there is somebody that can save it and it will be okay. Like, I haven't had in quite a long time a space-centric science-y film where I have felt so much, it's like, it's going to be all right, energy, and actually be like, oh, this is really beautiful, and this is really, it was more of a humanity story, like, and the interconnectivity between us all, which is something that we see in the Lego movie and like the Spider-Man movies at the animated ones. So I think it felt very, and I say this with affection, it was a popcorn movie that I could sit back and enjoy and I could show to other people without, you know, I know you guys are going to be like, science, logic, let us do this.
Wow. Is that how we sound?
Yes. Beepo boop bop. Right.
No, I'm more than a robot.
I am not an animal.
I was going to start trying to quote Rocky with his voice, but I can't. There's something that's just really, really human about something so scary. And it doesn't shy away from saying that the adults are scared too, and it's okay to be scared, and we're working towards a solution together.
As far as this film goes, do you guys have any major highlights or any major issues outside of what we've already stated?
Spencer!
Starting with Spencer, I guess.
I saw the thinking hat.
Usually that means he needs more time.
Yeah, so my main issue, I guess, is something that happened at the end of the movie, but I don't know how we want to approach that. Because Eddie, it's the thing.
It's just,
we can just skip over
this.
It's just
it's
the deviation from the original ending.
Yeah.
Do you feel that the book ending would have been better served in relation to the movie?
I think even in this one, they could have just dropped that.
Just the way there's a certain way it's presented differently.
Yeah.
Is it a better way?
It's just different.
There's lots of things that are just different.
We'll just leave it at that. It's just different. But
I'm never going to get an answer.
But I think there's something to be said about the fact that, like, the way the original ending of the book works in the scheme of the story that is told there versus the way the movie ends in the scheme of how the story is told there. I think that's probably the best way to kind of state it. If you're following the narrative of the book, the ending of it is more expected. It's more kind of like, yeah, that sounds about right. Versus the way this one ends after the story you've just experienced. I feel like, okay, yeah, I guess that could work. Like, in my thoughts.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I guess this could work. That's how I kind of...
What about you, Ames? Ames is over there looking up. She's like, what the heck is this ending? Stop looking at your phone. Put your phone down.
This
podcast is a one device podcast for me only.
For you only? He does it too.
Excuse me. I have a device right here with the soundboard.
You also have your phone in your hand.
Because I have to look up information because I know our intern doesn't look up anything.
Oh, so. I'm a managing intern, sir.
Managing.
Well, manage the information and hurry up.
So highlights, we've already talked about the puppetry work for Rocky. I really appreciated the set design of the Hail Mary or the Mary. the ship itself?
The ship, yeah. Yeah. The ship is named. You have to context. The context. Like, I we have yet to say.
That.
You said the Mary.
Yes, and I went to say the ship.
You said the Hail Mary.
Because, yeah.
What it, the hail?
Yeah, Hail Mary, full of grace.
What's that?
It the ship is. The,
just go. My God, just Mary, go.
It's a joke. He's you know, Dr. Grace. You going to do that again? Nice try. Ha ha. Oh, no. Yeah, you could try that again. It might work. It might not. You should say something to me.
What?
Oh, good. There you go. So really, when it comes down to it, the thing that I really liked the design of the ship, but also the environment of how it changes over time, too, with being lived in. It simultaneously felt like it was lived in and not and sterile in some spots. The chamber for the pilot was really insane to look at. That would have just made me super like button happy and I would have pushed all the buttons. And then there are a couple sequences where there's these shots that look like they should just be stills where Grace is either on the outside of the ship or he's moving and it's just like this, it's space and there's light and you're like, oh, that's nice. So yeah, I really like thems.
I think obviously out of everything we've already said a bunch of highlights and issues, whether it was with the trailer or the highlights of the, you know, the prop for the practical effect work for the puppetry. Yeah, I don't think I have any like major issues. I'm not as strongly averse to the situation at the end of the movie as Spencer is. But I can definitely see his perspective. So, yeah, I don't really think I have either. But that does bring us to our roundtable question of the evening. And that is, where does Project Hail Mary land for you among modern sci-fi films? Does it feel like a return to hopeful, idea-driven storytelling or something entirely on its own? Something entirely its own.
Ooh. Well, how far are we going for modern sci-fi films?
If you, I mean, I would say the last two decades, okay. Like in anything 2000 and up until now. Because I mean, if we look at modern science films, pretty much anything. I think Christopher Nolan has kind of capped most of those. Denis Villeneuve has done an incredible job. I mean, we're already in the third Dune film, which is a science film, science fiction film. I just feel like sci-fi is a very common, I guess, genre for most movies, specifically in the space arena. So to say that we haven't already kind of put our mark on the lifespan of science, like space sci-fi films, is an understatement. I mean, we even have YouTubers who are doing like Markiplier in space. Mm-hmm. You know, Iron Lung. Iron Lung is technically a space movie.
Yeah.
So I just feel like this should mark whether it's upon like the current modern day sci-fi or even sci-fi of old. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you guys feel it falls into?
Yeah. Do you want
me? Yeah, go ahead.
Yay. Because I went and briefly just looked up space sci-fi movies 2000 till now.
Mm-hmm.
And the consistency of the types of stories that were being and have been told really did have a focus of the world exploded and either one, we have to escape to the stars, or two, we are running from everything that is in the stars. Mm. And it has a very struggle to survive type of mentality. Yeah. And it's peppered with stories that are an unexpected hope. Mm-hmm. Wally. We talked about Wally.
Yeah, yeah.
Hilariously enough, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is based on a book, has something similar, and it's a speck of hope, but there's mania and anxiety and trauma. But there was also like District 9 that was in mm-hmm. in here, and the catastrophe of like our world with climate change and Pitch Black. So I'm like, it's all over the map. I think, however, when it comes to this, especially when the world kept looking for doom and gloom, this movie decided that it wanted to remind us to do the Star Trek thing and to look for hope. Because when we look at a lot of sci-fi, and I was thinking about this recently, but when we look at a lot of sci-fi, it's always the world's kind of ended and everything sucks and nobody got together and actually became a unit. Like, we never became Team Earth, except for Star Trek, because they believed that there was something else that could be done and we as a collective could pursue something more. Mm-hmm. And in this film, even though there's panic and mayhem going on, which is odd that we don't see it, it feels very self-contained that, like, these are the people that are fixing it and they're all from all over the world. They bring that collective unit together to look out, or to look not only for a solution, but to actively seek it with hope. So I think it is more a call to the Star Trek way of thinking, to go beyond and to boldly go, than the ones we've seen in the last 20 years or so. And it's not saying that it's all of them, but this I count this among the few.
What about you, Spence?
Okay, so this movie's good. So it lands, you like, you know, closer to, like, you know, middle top it's section of, like, you know, the last 20 years of movies. But a hopeful return. It's really interesting because, like, I feel like I could just see the studio be like, make this more hopeful than it actually was. And, like, so I'm like, because, like, I can just see the line of, like, make it more hopeful so people more enjoy it more. Not that we had a story to tell that was more hopeful from the start, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, I don't know, because, like, I kind of feel like I can see the machinations of the studios behind it of, like, we will tell hopeful stories if it sells. And, like, that's, like, not
true.
That's not really, I mean, what it's about.
I think you hit it.
Spencer, real quick. I love that Spencer's like, Amy, good job. Keep dreaming, pumpkin.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, you look at, mind you, it is a good, like, if we're looking in the scope of just the last two decades, it's a good space sci-fi film. Yeah. Is it great in comparison to other films that have come out during the last two decades? I don't know if it's up there with the greats. Mm. Like, because if one thing cinema has proven to us, it's that great sci-fi can come with great logical, like, scenes. It can come with great science as well. Mm-hmm. You know, The Martian, another Andy Weir book turned to movies, was riddled with science and mathematics. And, I mean, it was pretty much the basis as to how he survived. If you didn't have that, you just have somebody going crazy on Mars. You know, you look at that. You look at one of my most absolute favorite sci-fi films of the last two decades. That's 2016's Arrival. Arrival is riddled with the language of the universe, which is math. It is completely contingent on understanding that math is at the central of all things, you know. And mind you, there was a sense of kind of going back to that with this movie, but it never really kind of stayed long in that particular vein. And I think that's one of the things that this movie was missing, is, like, Andy Weir created a story that incorporated that much logic and science into it because of a purpose. There's a meaning behind it. There's intentionality. And yes, we all love a great science buddy movie. You know, Treasure Planet was in the last two decades. WALL-E was in the last two decades. Zathura was one from the last two decades. Like, I'm just thinking of, like, kids ones right off the bat. But then at the same time,
you literally named, of your three movies, two of them are based on books.
Yeah, but again, they're made to be liked. Their whole purpose is to be liked. They're to be consumed. Those books were meant to be bought and to be enjoyed by children and the likes of some adults out there as well, which is not, I'm not knocking on anybody. I'm just stating.
I was curious on.
But there's also great movies like Arrival, like Gravity, like Primer. Like, these are all incredibly great sci-fi films.
Interstellar.
Well, obviously that's an already intended one, but yes, Interstellar as well. Like, these are all incredibly science-based space sci-fi films. And the science is in it. The mathematics are in it. The intentionality where you have to be absolute genius to be able to make this work or nobody's going to live at the end of it. Like, you get that intention behind it. It's feasible. It can work. So I have to say, like, for my thoughts, yes, it lands somewhere in like the upper 70, like it's in the top like 25% as far as movies are concerned in terms of holistically, if you're looking at the last 2 decades, does it do something entirely on its own? No, I think it brings back a lot more of that heartfelt, kind of like what Amy was talking about with Flight of the Navigator. Everybody remembers Max, mm-hmm. you know, played by the incredible and late Paul Rubens. You know, all those types of things. You know, you look at like Mac and Me, like this feels like not as bad, but like the whole buddy alien buddy movie kind of thing. Like it feels a little like that. Like you're trying to see two people or two entities work together for the greater good of the universe. Even going to, as far as Amy mentioned earlier, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Or the Explorers. I didn't bring that up.
Or the Explorers. Like you're looking at these types of movies and there's a sense of like invitation. There's a sense of like, hey, you're coming to see two people come together who will eventually come to a place where they just can't do without. And, you know, we're going to see where their journey and where their hijinks end them up at. So,
which I think part of the thing is that you guys in the book already knew that that journey was there and together. However, when it came to me and to put this pin one more time in that trailer issue, if I had gone in just knowing it's some guy that's gone into space and he's trying to save the planet, and then there's a delightful surprise of a buddy working relationship to, you know, mm-hmm. save the universe, it would have
changed your expectations.
And it would have given me a entirely different viewing experience.
Which is what I was saying at the beginning of the review, is that like I think they should have, if they were going to do the reveal, they should have just went full in and highlighted the fact that this was going to be a space buddy movie. Like, bring it in. Just lean into it. Make sure people see him. Don't tease it. Because if you're going to tease it, then that means that there's a hidden aspect to it. And then not fully reveal who you're teasing in the next trailer. So, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
Did you try? Hey, it still doesn't work. You can't make me a squeaky.
I'm going to our...
So this film passes.
Up our music.
I don't know. This film passes for me. I really actually did have a good time in... If you haven't been able to tell, I am not the most logical person on this podcast. And I can see... Yep, there's the chuckling.
I'm just like, what does that have to do with
it? So when it comes to this, it's easier for me to look at something and I look for the wonder in it all, even if I don't understand the math. This movie, while Eddie and Spencer both have outlined why it is not one of the supreme utmost sci-fi movies of the last 2 decades, I can fully understand and recognize that. And I actually do agree with them that it's towards the top. But it is not the top. It's still something that you could actually watch with your kids, hilariously enough.
Yeah.
And it's something to remind you that there are people that are doing the work.
Or
that,
see with yourself. If you don't have kids, you can still watch it.
You
just saying.
Watch it. It's okay. family, your dog, your cat, your pet rock. But really, when it comes down to it, I am going to give this one 4.3 out of 5 monocles. And it is... not for the reason that you think, and it's not because they're staring at me. And by them, I mean Spencer and Eddie. Spencer!
I don't know what's happening here, Spencer.
Okay, anyway. this movie passes. You know, got a beginning, middle, and end. It captures the heart of the story. Does a good job of that. I feel... like the studio intervention is in the room with us when it comes to this movie. But like, it's not.
Are you feeling the spirit or something?
He's being moved. It moved me, Bob.
Like, I see their hands across this movie. And
Papa
usually,
Jeff Bezos is coming into the room right now.
Yeah. usually I'm not a big fan of like of studio interventions where like, you know, people have an artistic idea and like it gets changed.
Yeah.
I kind of get
Elio.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're still mad about that.
Yes.
Yeah, so I see that here, but like it's not as bad as it is in Elio.
Yeah.
It's terrible in Elio.
And like it actually can work here. Whereas that was just like, you know, you chopped off someone's foot and you're like, run a race. But for this movie, it works great. Rocky and Grace are still the awesome dynamic duo that they have been. Grace is a lot funnier because I remember him not being nearly as as charming as Ryan Gosling.
I don't think anybody's as charming as Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Which... I was worried about that, like, for a bit. I was like, is he going to be too charming in this movie?
Is he going to Keanu Reeves this?
Yeah, I can't handle that. Because I'm like, we might need to get someone not that charming.
But you need less charming and less pretty?
I was worried. I was actually worried.
Ooh, Spencer.
Okay, but no, it worked out fine. It's fine for the version of the story they're trying to tell.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's great.
He's pretty enough. He's charming enough. It's fine.
Yeah. So for me, it's 4 out of 5. They did a job.
There you go. As far as the film passing or fail does pass for me, it absolutely creates the story that we all know. If you've read the book, it definitely delivers on what you expect from the book in the film in its own adapted way. Sorry. As far as Monocles are concerned, this is one of those types of movies where you can watch, and even if you've read the book, understanding the visionary team behind the film, you know that it's going to be taking a certain turn to a sense of wholesomeness that can only come from the Miller Lord team. And again, if you've seen Mitchell's versus the Machines, you know what they're capable of. So this movie definitely is an adaptation of the original story, but it still brings together a wholesome and wonderful tale of two space individuals who are looking to save the world, or save the universe, to be honest. And so with that, I also have to give it a 4.0 out of 5. I definitely will plan to see this movie again, and I think these guys will too, and honestly, you should probably see it as well, because again, it's a wholesome film. It's definitely one for families together. And yeah, it was great. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There you can catch all of our episodes, allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, sci-fi, anything you're looking for, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers, and give us a follow. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Oh wow. My gosh, yes, we have. That's it.
That was weird. And if you like the, if you listen to the episode,
highly illogical.
If you watched the film as well, if you saw Project Hail Mary, let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below. Let us know, did you like the movie? Did you not like the movie? How do you feel about the adaptation of the novel into the film? Are you one of those people that's a purist where it's like, he didn't do this, so it's a no for me? Let us know your thoughts in the comment section. We love reading those. As well, if you want, you can catch us on all the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Over at Instagram, that's where we have our most fun, which you can catch all of our great stuff, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And guys, I just finished another one for Streaming is for Lovers. And if you like cheese all that, boy, do I got one that's not that.
Weren't we supposed to see something for
that? The Marlon Wayans time loop naked one.
I don't know.
Woo!
You can also check us out over at, I totally lost my spot, over at Blue Sky. FilmLobsterspodcast.social. Thank you for listening. We had such a great time talking about this movie and listening with you. And again, if you haven't had a chance, check out this movie. It's currently in theaters. And if you have a chance, check it out. So, but yeah, we had a great show. So from all of us here at the Film Lobsters, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm managing intern manager Amy.
Class dismissed.